At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, November 20th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Vangelista.
Hello.
All right, Chris, you and I are both in the middle of books right now that we don't feel comfortable talking about yet because we're not done with them. So maybe we can come back and resume that conversation once we're done. So let's just dive right into what we've been watching. And I wanted to give a shout out to this show that is on FX right now called Say Nothing. Have you heard of this show, Chris?
I've heard of the show and I tried reading the book because a lot of people have told me the book is good and I could not get into it. I don't know if I was just not in the right mindset or not. So I haven't read the book, so I haven't watched the show.
Gotcha. Okay. Yes. This is based on Patrick Radden Keefe's excellent nonfiction book that came out back in, I think, 2018. Jacob and I are both big fans of that book. I recommend it. But maybe the show would be an easier entry point because there's a lot of names, there's a lot of dates, there's a lot of like specifics in that book. And Patrick Radden Keefe is like incredibly detailed in his recounting of the story. And maybe it's a little easier to digest and keep all these names straight when you can just visually see a person. And the performances in the show are excellent across the board. Just like, actually, I'll take a step back and just say I'm 5 episodes in. I think there are 9 total. And this is one of my favorite TV shows of the year. Some of the best TV I've seen in a long, long time. The performances are really great across the board. There's a gut punch moment in episode 4 that I won't spoil here, but it's incredibly well done on a script level, but it's really elevated by the heartbreaking performances from the actors in the scene. The production design and the costumes are just absolutely spot on. It feels like watching a documentary. Sometimes in period pieces, I've found that like the limitations that filmmakers can have bleeds over into the final product, where it kind of seems obvious that like they can't point the camera in a certain direction because just outside the edge of the frame there's a bunch of modern stuff that would totally break the illusion. And this does not feel like that at all. It feels totally immersive and just like you absolutely are in that time and place, which is Ireland and Northern Ireland in the 1970s ish. I think the story actually spans like multiple decades, but that's kind of where the first 5 episodes center anyway. But yeah, this is on FX on Hulu right now, and it's just excellent, excellent stuff. So it's called Say Nothing, and it's about the troubles in Ireland and Northern Ireland and the clash with the British colonizers, basically. So really good stuff there. I rewatched Double Indemnity, which I've seen a bunch of times, but my wife got me on, I forget now if it was 4K or Blu-ray that the Criterion Collection released a version of it. But now I own that on physical media, which I'm pleased about. And it had been a little while since I've seen it. This is like one of my favorite film noir movies, like one of the ultimate film noir movies. And I had actually forgotten some of the stuff that happens late in the story in terms of like all the labyrinthine twists and turns and stuff like that, which is just a really fun way to revisit a favorite movie or a movie that I love the vibe of. A lot of these noir stories get so complicated that, like, famously there's that story that Raymond Chandler, who wrote The Big Sleep, the filmmakers who were adapting that movie like called up Raymond Chandler one time because they were like, who the hell is this guy and why did he die? And Raymond Chandler's like, I don't know. I can't answer that question. Like, the story is so complicated that even I, the author, don't know the answer to your question. So anyway, it's not surprising that I forgot some of the ins and outs of how that plays out. But I just want to recommend Double Indemnity, especially if people are looking for like great noir movies with awesome performances and excellent direction from Billy Wilder there. When was the last time you watched Double Indemnity, Chris? Is that a favorite of yours?
Probably a few years ago. But yeah, I loved it when I saw it, except for it's Barbara Stanwyck, right? That's who?
Yes.
Boy, that wig she wears is so bad in that movie. Oh my God. I remember like reading, like when I watched the movie, I was like, why is her wig so awful? And I remember reading that like even the people who made the movie were like, we hated that wig. It's just like, boy, I wish this, like, that's the only flaw in that movie. She just has like this, all, like, she's like wearing like George Washington's hair or something. I don't know. It's very weird.
Yeah. Yeah. I will. Oh my God. I've never heard it put that way. I will. I'll have to pay close attention on my next rewatch to that. So speaking of older movies, I watched a film from 1932 called Jewel Robbery. That, Chris, I think you would like, if for no other reason that it's 70 minutes long. So it like barely nice. Feels like anything. But man, it's so fun. It's another sort of pre-code rom-com. It's a heist comedy starring William Powell, who's one of my favorite actors. And Kay Francis co-stars in this one. And she's just like, she plays this really rich baroness in Vienna, Austria, and she's kind of like just going about her life, really bored in her marriage and like sleeping around with a bunch of different people and stuff. And then William Powell plays this suave jewel thief who basically like holds up the jewelry store that she and her husband are in, and I think her ex-lover is also in there at the same time. And the jewel thief is just this, yeah, like suave debonair personality that kind of sweeps her off her feet, and the two of them get engaged in this unexpected romance. And it's just a really, really fun, short, punchy little movie from the early 30s that I had a lot of fun with. It's not like one of my favorite William Powell performances or anything, but he's like undefeated in my eyes. He's just like, he has exactly what I want from movie stars of that era. So the movie's called Jewel Robbery. I watched it on I think it was airing on AMC, so I'm not sure if that one's streaming anywhere. But the last thing I wanted to talk about is a movie that you also saw, Chris, and I saw your reaction to this, and I feel differently about it than you do, so I'm excited to have this conversation with you, and that is Juror Number 2, which is Clint Eastwood's potentially final movie. This is his newest movie anyway, and Ryan and I did a whole episode about what Warner Brothers Discovery is doing with the release of that movie, and we were baffled by all of that. And I have to say, I was not a huge fan of this film. I love the idea of it. I love it on paper, but there was something about the execution and specifically the script that I was just like not vibing with at all. But I think you were in the complete opposite camp, right, Chris? I think you like this one a lot.
Yeah, I really dug this. I don't think it's like a great movie. It doesn't like reinvent the wheel, but it's the type of movie we used to get all the time and we took for granted and we don't get anymore. And I think that's part of why I liked it so much. It's this very, it's like an adult driven movie. It's to the point. It's both simple, but it's also like deceptively complex in how it approaches its main character. And, you know, they don't really make movies like this anymore. And I kind of appreciated that, like, this exists. Like, to be fair, it got dumped and Warner Brothers treated it like shit, and that's a shame. But the fact that it does exist is interesting. And I really liked how it plays out. I really like how the main character, you know, I won't go into too many spoilers for people who haven't seen it, but the plot of the movie is, it's basically like a remake of 12 Angry Men if one of the members of the jury committed the crime. Nicholas Hoult plays this guy who gets picked for jury duty, and he gets put on a jury of a guy who's accused of murdering his girlfriend. And Nicholas Hoult pieces it together that he might have killed this woman in a hit and run a year ago. He didn't realize he thought he hit a deer. It was like a dark and rainy night. His car hit something and he didn't see anything. He just assumed like, I must have hit a deer. But as it turns out, this woman probably got hit by a car. She fell over this bridge into like a quarry. And the prosecutor, played by Toni Collette, thinks that her abusive boyfriend beat her to death and threw her off this bridge. And Nicholas Hoult realizes like, I probably hit her with my car. And so like his whole thing is like, he doesn't want to come forward and admit it because he's worried he'll get, you know, accused of manslaughter or first degree murder even. And because he was at a bar at the time of the incident, and even though he didn't have a drink, he's a recovering alcoholic, and that's like enough that they could prosecute him for the crime. So he's like, he needs to sway the jury to find this guy innocent without coming forward and confessing that he's the one who committed the crime. And mm-hmm. What I really appreciated about the movie is like, as it goes along, the Nicholas Hoult character becomes more morally gray. Like the decisions he makes are ultimately very self-serving, and they're very like, you know, you could argue that like he's sort of doing the right thing and trying to get this guy innocent, found innocent, but he's also trying to cover his ass. And I don't want to give away spoilers, but I really appreciated how the movie doesn't like take an easy way out. It takes like a morally gray approach. And what I also really liked about this movie is that the overarching message of the movie is that our institutions are only as good as the people controlling them. Institutions will not save us in the end. Like, the justice system is this vague idea, and the justice system is only as good as the people who uphold it. And I found that a very timely message. You know, please excuse me as I get political here right now, but you know, our future president, Mr. Donald Trump, has a wealth of criminal charges levied against him, and the court system slow rolled all this stuff to the point where they're pretty much obsolete right now. Like, he's about to be president again. He's probably going to pardon himself for any crime he's been convicted of or accused of. And I think that just like speaks to the, like, what this movie is saying, you know, that the justice system only works if people make it work. You know, you can't just be like, oh, our institutions will save us. Like, no, they won't if no one is doing the right thing. And mm-hmm. the movie makes a point of like being like, there's no like quote unquote bad people here. Like, the Nicholas Hoult has trouble convincing some members of the jury that this guy is innocent. And I think the movie does a good job of making it clear that these people aren't being like wrong. They're just like, there's this one woman who's like, I want to get home to my kids. Like, people are just busy. People have no time for this shit in their lives. They just want to get home and get back to their lives. And it's easier to just be like, let's find this guy guilty than it is to like find him innocent. It's easier to do the easy thing. And I think that's what this movie is saying. And I just found that like a very interesting thing for a movie to say at this point in time.
Yeah, the justice system won't save us, but the people will idea that you mentioned there, I think it's really well communicated through the relationship between Chris Messina's character, who is the defense attorney, and then Toni Collette, who's the prosecutor. I think some of their scenes really underline that idea and get that across very well. I think actually I agree with everything that you've said, and I like all of the stuff that you said, and I like that this movie does all of that. So I think the film has like really strong bones. But I think the script is just so like the premise of this movie is great, but the actual execution of the individual scenes can be really creaky and awkward and wooden and stilted. And like every scene with the jury members just feels like something out of I Think You Should Leave or something. It just does not feel real or human at all. Like that person that you're talking about who is like, I want to go home and be with my kids or whatever, like, yes, that is a relatable idea and a human idea. And like, you know, the idea of like, what do we owe our fellow people and our fellow citizens when we serve on a jury? Like, these are all interesting and relatable questions. But the movie, the execution of the way that this movie handles those things, it just makes that character feel really, I don't know, callous and like, it's very surface level. It doesn't actually probe into those questions in a way that I found satisfying. And I think a lot of it has to do with the casting. Like almost everyone in supporting roles in this movie, like everyone who's not a name that you recognize, I think is just like pretty poorly cast and doesn't really do a great job just on a fundamental acting level. I mean, I know it's difficult to like diagnose performances because I'm not an actor and there's a lot of technicalities that go into delivering a performance that that are just way over my head. I acknowledge that, but I just think those performances did not work for me at all. Like the way that those people in the jury room talk during the deliberation just felt it felt like a really, really pale imitation of 12 Angry Men instead of like an exciting modern riff on those same ideas that movie got into. You know, it just kind of felt like 12 Angry Men was like shoved through an AI generator or something. Right. Like, I don't know. There's something about the way that the script functions that really kind of kept me at arm's length from this movie. And I think like all the lead performances are good. You know, Nicholas Hoult was good. Toni Collette's good. J.K. Simmons has a pretty small role, but I thought he was enjoyable. I always like seeing Chris Messina pop up and stuff. And even like the judge was good. It was just, it's really like the fellow jury members, which we spend a lot of time with those characters, that just kind of like sank or tanked the movie for me almost, where I love everything it's trying to do. I just thought the execution was like pretty rough. And maybe that's like partly Clint Eastwood's fault because he's famous for like, oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, I do think a lot of your problems probably stem from how Clint Eastwood makes movies now. He's very,
yeah.
He's like infamous for like doing like one take and being like, all right, we're done. And, you know, that's how he keeps his movies under budget and they come in under schedule. But I do feel like if someone like, you know, David Fincher was directing this and doing like 100 takes, the performances would probably be a little better. Like, I don't even think what you're saying is wrong. I just think like that didn't bother me as much as it bothered you.
Yeah. So yeah, that's Juror Number 2. I think it might technically still be out in some very, very limited theaters. I know it only got like whatever, a 50 screen theatrical run or something. I thought I read somewhere that it was going to be pulled from theaters last week, but then I just saw on social media somewhere that like it has screenings still available in New York City this Friday. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on with that really botched, weird rollout. But word just came out, I think yesterday, that Juror Number 2 is going to hit Max, the streaming service, on December 20th, I think is the date, sometime in December. Right. So, okay, cool. So yeah, people will be able to check it out there and judge for yourselves. So, all right, with all of that said, let's take a break and then we'll come back and get into what Chris has been watching.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans.
$829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
All right, Chris, let's do it. Hit me up. What have you been checking out recently?
Yeah, I got a few things. I'm playing catch up because it's the end of the year and I'm in a critics group and we get a lot of end of year screeners, which is great for me because it's like I can catch up on stuff I missed. And I'm also seeing stuff that hasn't been released yet and stuff like that. So I finally got to watch Beetlejuice 2, or Beetlejuice, as it's called. And a lot of people, including people we work with, said they liked this movie. They said it's a return to form for Tim Burton. So I was excited because, you know, when I was a kid, when I was younger, I loved Tim Burton. I was a weird goth kid and I loved his sensibilities. I loved the original Beetlejuice. But I have to say, everyone who told me this movie is good, you are wrong. This movie is terrible. I'm sorry, but this movie is just junk. It's barely a movie. It's basically like a collection of really hacky bits that are just like strung together. And I did not care for it at all, which really disappointed me because I was really hoping that, you know, I would like a Tim Burton movie again. I haven't liked a Tim Burton movie since probably like Big Fish is probably the last movie he's made that I liked. And I was really hoping I would like this, but I didn't at all. There's like at the end of this movie, there's this like extended bit where they like do the entirety of MacArthur Park. And I was like, why won't this end? It keeps going. And I was just like, I hate this. So I did not like Beetlejuice 2. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, it's a real missed opportunity, I think. What did you think about Michael Keaton, though? Did you feel like he still had the juice, so to speak?
He was fine, I guess, but I also feel like he's in the movie too much. Like, he's much more of a presence in this than he was in the first movie. And I get it. That's what people would expect. But if you rewatch the first movie, he's really not in it that much. And I think that works in the film's favor because that character is a lot to take, and he works better in small doses than he does here when he's like a major presence. So yeah, mm-hmm. Lydia seems like absolutely nothing like she was in the original movie. And I get that decades have passed, so obviously the character would have changed, but the way she behaves in this movie feels completely removed from how the character is in the original movie, which just seems like a weird choice to make to me. Like, why bring Lydia back and have her be not the way she was. I don't know. I really did not like this. I wanted to, you know, Willem Dafoe is good. He's having a good time. But other than that, nothing for this worked for me.
Yeah, the Monica Bellucci subplot in particular, I was just like, what are we doing here? What's going on?
But, like, come on. Like, I don't know. Like,
what did you think about Jenna Ortega? Was she a bright spot for you, or is she just like more blah?
Not really. I don't dislike her, but she did like nothing for me in this movie. Like, I was just like, yeah. Like, I don't know. Just like the whole movie just felt like I did appreciate that there's a lot of practical makeup effects in this. I liked that. Like, that's cool. That it didn't go like completely CGI, but other than that, I really was like let down by this, and I'm kind of baffled that so many people were like, it's fun. Like, no, it isn't. Like, what are you talking about?
Okay, well, let's talk about a movie that you really did like.
Yes, so I got to see Nosferatu, the new Nosferatu, and while the review embargo hasn't been lifted yet, the social sentiment embargo is up, so I'm allowed to talk about it, and I loved this. This really impressed me. It's from Robert Eggers, who directed The Witch and The Lighthouse and The Northman. But this is phenomenal. I like pretty much all his movies, but I was really impressed by this. It's really effective. It's surprisingly scary. Like, I'm very desensitized to horror movies because I'm a horror movie fan, and I consume so many horror movies that while I appreciate and love horror movies, I'm very rarely actually scared by them. Like, that's just like a thing that's like foreign to me because I've just been so like inundated by them. So there are moments in the movie that genuinely gave me the creeps. And anytime that happens, I'm really impressed because if you can give me the creeps, you're doing something right. So I won't give away spoilers, but I will say that like, if you've seen the other Nosferatu films, or if you've seen a Dracula movie, you're kind of going to know what you're going to get here. It's not like reinventing that story in a way. It's sort of telling the same story, but it does it in this really interesting, unique way. Everyone here is doing really good work. Bill Skarsgård is really impressive because Nosferatu, Count Orlok, that character is so iconic. He's so baked into the pop culture consciousness, and Bill Skarsgård finds a really interesting way of making the character his own. So I was really kind of impressed with that. And I really dug this. It comes out on Christmas Day. I think people are going to dig it.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Maybe if I get a chance to see it right before Christmas, we can like record a spoiler discussion, really get into some details about it or something and try to put that up around the time of the movie's release. So potentially stay tuned for that if I can get like a screener or something like that. So what else have you been checking out, Chris?
I got to watch Saturday Night, which is the Saturday Night Live movie. It's about the lead up to the first episode of Saturday Night Live. And I thought this was okay. I really like the energy. It has this really great, like, ticking clock energy because it's unfolding in like the 90 minutes or so leading up to the premiere episode, and everything's going wrong. I do think this movie has a problem that a lot of movies like this have. A lot of movies that are about really well-known figures and really well-known events, they have this problem where they're constantly like reminding you of stuff that it's like, cause it's like, you got to remember the real things that happened. So everyone in this movie is a famous person, like Chevy Chase and John Belushi, the problem this movie has is a lot of the actors, they feel like they're doing impressions rather than giving performances. And that just really takes me out of the movie. And there's all this like winking bullshit where it's like, you want John Belushi to dress as a giant bee? Wah, wah, wah. It's like, all right. Like, I don't need the movie to hit me over the head with this stuff. That said, there are things I liked. I like that the movie does kind of portray Chevy Chase as an asshole because that's what everyone says Chevy Chase is. It's just a piece of shit. And the movie kind of underscores that he's kind of a jerk. I was really impressed with Cooper Hoffman, who plays Dick Ebersol. I think because Dick Ebersol isn't as like a well-known person as like John Belushi is, Cooper Hoffman has more room to make a character rather than like do an impression. And he reminded me so much of his father in this. It's kind of like spooky. His father is, of course, Philip Seymour Hoffman. And there's like a few scenes where he's doing sort of things that feel like how his father would play the role. And I was just like, this made me want to see, I want Cooper Hoffman to be in more movies because he's really good at acting. Just like, and you know, I wish his dad was still around, and sadly he's not. And this is like the next best thing. I do have some gripe, major gripes. Have you seen this, Ben?
I did. Yeah. I kind of hated it.
Yeah. I really, really, really hate how the movie portrays Jim Henson. To be fair, everyone who worked on Saturday Night Live did not like Jim Henson. They did not like the Muppets. They didn't get it. So it's accurate in how the movie portrays the staff not getting the Muppets, but the movie portrays Jim Henson as this like nerdy square dork. And that's not what Jim Henson was like. Jim Henson is just as much of a counterculture figure as anyone else who worked on Saturday Night Live. And to portray him as this like square nerd who doesn't like curse words is so like, it pisses me off, man. Like, cause the movie is like, if you're going to like hail Lauren Michaels, who's this like, Lauren Michaels is 10 times the nerd that Jim Henson is portrayed as here. And if like, I'm sorry, you can't make Lauren Michaels the cool guy and Jim Henson the nerd. It really does not sit well with me at all. So yeah. So I like the energy. I like the, the production value, but I did not love the movie.
Okay. So that's Saturday night. What's next?
Well, why did you hate it, Ben? Tell me why you hated it. I'm curious.
Well, I feel like the stakes, you know, we know what happens. We know they succeed. So the stakes just kind of felt non-existent to me. And then, yeah, all that kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge stuff, which is like a huge part of the movie, just kind of bothered me. I was just kind of like, I don't really understand the point of this movie. Like, I understand the idea of like recreating the energy and like recreating the sets, and I thought, you know, it looked pretty good, and the casting was all well done and all that kind of stuff. I just feel, at the end of the day, I was just like, okay, great. Like, why did I watch that? What did that impart to me? Like, it didn't really have anything insightful to say about, to me anyway, about like the generational clash that was going on that SNL kind of represented, or this movie is trying to like frame SNL as representing at the time. Like, it didn't really have anything deeper than just like, these young bucks want to come in and like flip the script on what comedy can be versus what, J.K. Simmons was doing as Milton Berle, like, right, dancing around on a stage with showgirls or whatever. Like, it just kind of felt so simplistic that there wasn't even a point there. And so I kind of just felt like the movie was a waste of time at the end of the day. So, waste of time is maybe too strong, but there are things that are worthwhile about it. But I just kind of, I don't know. Brad loves this movie, and I think his SNL fandom is like so intense that he really appreciated all of those winks and nods because they mean something to him. And as somebody who has watched SNL sporadically on and on, or off and on throughout my life, those winks and nods were just kind of, I just kind of met them with a shrug instead of being excited about any of them. And when the whole movie is that, I just kind of had ultimately a shrug reaction to the whole thing. So okay, so a movie that I don't think anybody can really shrug about is Anora, and you caught up with this one. I think Jacob and I talked about this last Friday on the podcast, but what do you think about Anora?
Yeah, I thought this was great. Anora is basically like a gritty Pretty Woman remake, I guess you could say. Mikey Madison is so good in this. I've been aware of her. I've seen her other stuff, obviously. Like, she was in the Scream reboot or revival, and she was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I thought she was fine in those movies, but after seeing her in this, I'm like, oh, I get it. I get why everyone likes her, because she's so good in this movie. It's going to be in my top 10 for sure. It's not at the top. Like Jacob said, this is like his number one movie of the year. It's not that for me. I do think it has a few issues here and there, but it's funny until it isn't. Like, it goes to some upsetting places. But I really dug this. I really thought it was really well made. It's not my favorite Sean Baker movie. I think I like The Florida Project more. But I was really impressed with this. I was really impressed with liking that. I feel like this is one of those movies where like the main performance is what makes the movie. Like if Mikey Madison was not in this, it would not be as good as it is. And I feel like that's not like a flaw, obviously, but I do feel like that like sort of coloring the reaction to the movie. I feel like more people are reacting more to her than they are to the movie as a whole.
Yeah, that's a good distinction to make. And it's such a ferocious performance that it's hard not to, because she's just such a powerhouse in it, you know?
Yeah, she's so good. Yeah. And I want to see her in like a million things now. Yeah.
Okay, so that's Anora. That's still in theaters right now. Tell me about Nickel Boys. I've heard some really good things about this one.
Boy, this movie is phenomenal. Oh my God, this movie blew me away. This is based on a book by Colson Whitehead, who also wrote The Underground Railroad. And I'm sad to say I have not read this book. I haven't read The Underground Railroad either. But it's inspired by the true story of the Dozier School for Boys, which is this reform school in Florida that had like a long history of abuse and even like murder of students, which I'm sad to say I was completely unaware of this. But and to just show you how fucked up this is, the school closed in 2011. So it opened in the 1900s. It closed in 2011. So it was around for a very long time, and it only recently got shut down. So that just goes to show how institutionalized this abuse was. But this is about a young black man in the 1960s who he accepts a ride from a guy, and the guy had actually stole the car he gives him. So this young guy, his name is Elwood, he had done nothing wrong, but because he was in the car with a guy who stole the car, he gets sent away to this reform school. And while he's there, he befriends another student named Turner. And what makes this movie so interesting is the entire movie is shot in POV. So it jumps from either Elwood's POV or Turner's POV. So the whole movie is the camera like looking out at other characters and characters off camera delivering dialogue. And I've seen forms of this in other films and TV shows, but I've never seen it done on the level it's done here. And I hate when people say things like, you've never seen anything like this, because it sounds like hyperbole, but I really don't think you've ever seen a movie quite like this. Like, it's sort of like inventing a whole new film language, and it's a devastating movie. I don't want to give the impression that it's like 2 hours of torture porn. Like, there is abuse in the movie, but it mostly happens sort of like off camera in a way. It's not like a slog. You're not going to be like, I'm miserable watching this, but it is like an emotionally wrenching film. And without giving too much away, I will say like the final scene of this got me in such a, the final shot got me in such like an emotional level that like when it happened, I was like the wind like got knocked out of me. I was just like, holy shit. I was just so impressed by this. I really hope, this was supposed to come out earlier and then they pushed it back to December. I really hope it doesn't get lost in the shuffle. I don't know like how much hype there is around this. I don't know how much buzz there is around this, but this is, if it were not for The Brutalist, this would be my number one movie of the year. The Brutalist is still number one. This is my number two. This is just, it's really unique and it's beautiful and it's haunting in ways that are like, hard to really describe. And I'm not trying to like shrug it off and like pass the buck, but it's just like I said, I really don't think anyone has seen a movie quite like this.
Wow. Okay. So that's called Nickel Boys. It's going to have a limited theatrical release on December 13th. It's an Amazon movie, so it'll be on Prime Video at some point, but I'm not really sure what the planned rollout is in terms of when it's actually going to be streaming. But anyway, limited theatrical on December 13th. Check that out. That one's definitely on my radar. What else have you been watching, Chris?
I watched Heretic, which is the new A24 movie with Hugh Grant. And I mostly like this. I don't love it. I think the first act is incredible. Like when I was watching this, when the first act unfolded, I was like, oh my God, this is like one of the best movies I've seen all year. And then the movie sort of changes what it is and it sort of lost me. But Hugh Grant is so good here playing the villain. He's doing a really great job. I had fun with it. I enjoyed watching it, but it's not quite as good as I was hoping it would be. Have you seen this? Mm.
Yeah, Jacob and I talked about it, and I basically came down on the same place as you. I think Jacob liked it a little bit more than either of us did. But yeah, by the time it gets to the stuff that happens, and especially the last act, it just kind of feels a little sillier than how the movie began. And it began on such a strong note that
everything leading up to the point where they go into the basement of the house works for me. Yep. And once they get into the basement, I was like, oh, I don't like this as much anymore.
yeah, definitely. There's still, I think is strong enough overall for me to recommend it. And I still enjoyed my time with it,
it's worth seeing for like Hugh Grant alone. He's having so much fun playing this like creepy character that makes it worth seeing. But yeah, I just wish I wish the whole movie was as good as that lead up, because that lead up is so good.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so you also saw Gladiator 2. What'd you think about that one?
Yeah, I thought this was fine. It's an okay movie. It's for almost the entire, like the first two acts, or like the first hour and a half, sort of, it plays almost like a remake of the original. It's got like the same basic premise where a guy loses someone he loves. Someone he loves is murdered by the order of Rome. He gets sold into slavery. He becomes a gladiator. He wants revenge. Like that's literally the plot of the first movie. And then the last act becomes something different. And I really wish the whole movie had been the last act, because that's a lot more interesting. This is sort of like the reverse of Heretic, I guess, where it's like the ending is better than the rest of the movie. But it's entertaining enough. It's really well made. It's really worth seeing for Denzel Washington, who is just having a great time in this movie. Oh man, he's so much fun to watch. I've said this elsewhere, but like, I don't think we take Denzel Washington for granted. Like, everyone loves Denzel Washington. He's a multi-Oscar winner. He's like the last movie star. He's a box office draw. But at the same time, anytime I watch a movie with Denzel Washington, he shows up and he like knocks it out of the park. And it's almost like I forget how good he is until I'm watching him. And then I'm like, oh man, Denzel Washington is so good. Like, I just want to watch him all the time. And he's like the reason to see this movie.
Man, I'm very excited about that. And I'm especially excited about the idea of it sort of turning into something that's not a straightforward rehash in the back half. I'm so intrigued by that. I'm doing a double feature tomorrow night of Gladiator 2 and Wicked. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, I'm excited about this. Okay, so let's see. What else have you been watching? Oh, you watched The Crow, the new version of The Crow.
This is stupid. This is a stupid movie. This is one of those remakes where The Crow doesn't really become The Crow until the last half hour. It's like, what are you doing? Like, why are you making a movie like this? It's so like, it's not like a badly made movie. It looks fine. It's very gory, which I don't think I was expecting. It's like gorier than the original, which I guess counts for something if you're into gore and blood and stuff like that. But it's so like blah compared to that original. The original is so like burned into my brain as this, like, I don't want to say it's a great movie, but it's a very good movie. It's got style. It's got this like great gothic atmosphere.
Super of its time.
Yeah, it's a very 90s movie, but it holds up. I think it holds up really well. And The Crow becomes The Crow pretty much in the first 10 minutes of the movie. Whereas in this movie, you gotta wait for him to become The Crow. And it's like, why are we doing this? I guess they're like, we gotta save something for the sequel that we're never gonna make. But I did not care for this. It's not like an abomination. It's just very forgettable. And I think forgettable is something that you would not say about that original movie. The original movie is very memorable. And this is sort of like, who cares? Like, why am I watching this?
Wild that Bill Skarsgård could turn out two performances or make two movies that are on such opposite ends of the spectrum in the same year.
Yes. So, very odd. Very odd performer.
Yeah. All right. So the last thing that you're talking about, I'm so curious what you think about this. Hot Frosty on Netflix is the movie that's taken Netflix by storm. So I have never, I'm not going to watch this, Chris, but what did you think about it? First of all, what caused you to press play on this?
Yes.
And then what did you think about it?
So my girlfriend really loves Netflix Christmas rom-coms. And I don't mean she thinks they're good, but she loves watching them. And every time we watch them, she'll be like, this is awful, but she wants to watch them. So when this came out, she was like, we gotta watch this. So I was like, sure, let's watch it. Why not? And, you know, it's not terrible. I mean, it is terrible, but it's not like, it's not terrible in an offensive way. That's how I'll put it. It's very silly. It's, you know, it's not gonna like, I will probably never watch it again, but I didn't like hate watching it. It's got its moments. It's charming enough. You know, the premise.
Lacey Chabert falls in love with a snowman. That's basically the idea, right?
So, it's Christmas time. There's a snowman competition in this town, and a bunch of people make snowmen, and all the other snowmen look generic. And then there's someone creates this really hot looking snowman. And I got to say, the movie never tells us who built the snowman, which I think is like a missed opportunity, because I feel like they should have been like someone who's like, oh my God, my creation has come to life, like a Frankenstein thing. But they never they never tell us who made the snowman. Someone makes a snowman and then I guess leaves town. Anyway, there's a magic scarf and Lacey Chabert puts it on the snowman and the snowman turns into a guy. And even though he clearly has flesh, he's clearly like a guy, he also can still melt, I guess, if he gets too hot. It doesn't really make much sense. It's just a very strange movie.
Does she call him Frosty?
No, his name, he calls himself Jack because he puts on like a shirt, like a mechanic shirt that says Jack on it. And so she's like, is your name Jack? And he's like, I guess. And they just go with that.
Anyone ever acknowledge the existence of Frosty the Snowman within the lore of this movie? Like, no, why is it called Hot Frosty?
They don't talk about Frosty the Snowman, but they do. By the end of the movie, everyone in town has figured out that this is a living snowman and they just go along with it. Like, my favorite part of the movie is there's a part where Lacey Chabert's character, she owns a diner and like the entire town is inside the diner and they're talking about the snowman. And she's like, you guys all accept that he's a snowman? And this woman's like, why not? It's Christmas. And everyone is like, yeah. And I'm like, like it's the perfect reasoning for this sort of movie. We're just like, we all accept that a snowman can come to life if it's Christmas. I'm not going to say this is like a great movie, but there's worse ways. Like, I enjoyed watching this more than I enjoyed watching The Crow. So, you know, make of that of what you will.
All right. So is this going to enter your Christmas rotation, Chris? Are you going to watch this every year?
No, I don't think so. But I'm sure if they make Hot Frosty 2, which they probably will, based on how well this is doing for Netflix, I'm sure I'll end up watching that.
All right. Well, I look forward to you telling me how that is in a year or something.
Yes.
All right. So the last section that we get into here is what we've been eating. This is normally Brad's territory, but I just wanted to mention that I returned to Parlor Donuts, which is a place that I've talked about on the podcast before. I think there are Parlor Donuts locations all over the country, but there's one that's like just down the street from my house. And I don't go there very often, but my wife and I ducked in the other day to grab one and I got the chocolate donut, which I'm going to read from the website. Features a rich chocolate glaze and mini chocolate chips atop our signature layered base, finished with a chocolate syrup drizzle for triple the chocolate delight. As you might expect, Chris, by the end, the chocolate chips were a bit much. This whole thing was probably a little too sweet, even for me. I love sweet stuff, but I could have done without those. So I'll likely stick to something simpler in the future, but I rarely have the opportunity to really weigh in on this what we've been eating section, and I figured another trip to Parlor Donuts might hit the bar for chiming in on this section. So that's that. I recommend that place because it's different than just like a traditional cake donut or like a glazed donut or something. It's almost like a cronut type of situation, but really good stuff.
Sponsor
there.
The show after this plug. Call us Parlor Donuts. / Film Daily, brought to you by Parlor Donuts.
Yeah, I'd love that. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about a lot of the stuff that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com. I will link to a few things in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Maybe too close.
Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.